shout out to our board member, Janet, who's here. Janet lives in Spokane.
Liberty Lake,
yes, right where the pipeline is, as we'll talk about. And then Helen Yost is also here from Wild Idaho Rising Tide. Woo! Yes, I've learned a lot from Helen. And yeah, Wild Idaho Rising Tide, Earth Ministry, White Bull, we're part of the Stop GTN Express Coalition, which is made up of organizations across Washington, Oregon, and Idaho who are fighting this fossil fuel project. And I also want to give a shout out to Dr. Anne-Marie Dooley, who is with Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility, who is also co-sponsoring this event today. So just for a quick roadmap of where we're going, so Helen and I are going to speak for a little bit about GTN Express and why we're here today. Then we'll have some time for questions. And then after that, we'll take a short break around 7:15-ish and for a bathroom break if people need it, to get a shirt or a sign. And then what we're gonna do is walk together a couple blocks to the Spokane River, where we're gonna have a group photo, have maybe a few more speakers, and then share a prayer together. So that's where we're going tonight. So how many people know what GTN is? Well, I'm super happy to tell you about it if you don't, and to just share more about the folks who already do know. So GTN stands for Gas Transmission Northwest. And this is not a new pipeline. This is an existing fracked gas pipeline that's about 60 years old. And it starts from British Columbia, the BC-Idaho border, and then runs through North Idaho, through Sandpoint, where Helen lives, through eastern Washington, and then eastern and central Oregon. And then it technically ends at the Oregon-California border, although it connects up with another pipeline there. So the fracked gas that goes through this existing pipeline is fracked in northeast British Columbia, and then there's various delivery points along the pipeline route. And this pipeline is owned by TC Energy, which is formerly known as TransCanada, which is the same company that is behind the Keystone and Keystone XL projects. So they're rather notorious in this fossil fuel space. So where is the GTN pipeline? So part of why we're here today in Spokane is because this is right in the community. This is an issue that folks should know about and be concerned about. So the GTN pipeline actually goes through fairly populated areas of Liberty Lake, where Janet lives. Is anybody else here from Liberty Lake? Spokane Valley, anyone? Yeah, so it actually does run through like neighborhoods, and it goes, part of the reason why we wanted to go, you know, take action at the Spokane River is because it runs under the Spokane River and has for 60 years. And then it also goes under I-90 and then under, and I was hoping to project slides for this, but I have a map that I will send around to everyone who's signed in so you can see exactly where the pipeline goes. And it actually, you know, where the pipeline was built, when it was built 60 years ago, it was a significantly more rural area, and then the community has sort of grown up around it, and so that's why there's so many safety concerns, I think. With a gas pipeline in our neighborhoods, it goes, what I discovered on this map, it goes pretty close to a preschool near Ridgeline High School, and then it actually goes under a church parking lot and playground in Spokane Valley. And I'm hoping to connect with those folks about that since we are. It's called Valley Real Life in Spokane Valley. Yeah, because, as faith communities, because we care a lot about preventing harm to our neighbors and taking care of our neighbors and taking care of creation, and this sort of goes against all of that. And a lot of the pipeline that goes, this pipeline that goes through eastern Washington and eastern and central Oregon, it is in very rural areas, but then it is also in communities. Like, Helen and I have been working with some folks in Bend, Oregon, who are concerned about the pipeline, this pipeline that goes also near Bend. And being, like, right in their communities as neighborhoods get built up around it, because you can't build anything directly on top of the pipeline, like a structure or building. I'm just realizing I forgot to let Katrina speak briefly. After I speak, and then, I just got so excited about GTN to tell you all about it.
And we have a sunset to beat, so.
Yes, we do have a sunset to beat. Thanks to Katrina, who's hosting us here at Salem Lutheran, so you'll hear from her in a little bit. And because, as I was saying, you can't build directly on the pipeline, but you can build fairly close to it, like the radius of the right-of-way that you have to leave. Like, you can see very clearly, like, there's just this strip of land and then houses on either side. It's a little scary when you look at it and see actually how close this is to our communities. Okay. So now I'm going to talk about GTN Express. So GTN is this existing pipeline. The GTN Express project is a proposal by the pipeline's owner, TC Energy, to ramp up and increase the amount of gas they push through this existing pipeline. And one thing, like, environmental organizers and community organizers have noticed across the country recently is that as new pipelines get stopped or get shut down, there is an increased effort by fossil fuel companies to try to push the same amount of gas, or try to push more gas through existing pipelines, because it's a lot harder to stop that sort of project, and I'll talk about why that is. And so, so adding this increased fracked gas capacity to this pipeline means increased pressure. So if they want to push more gas through the pipeline, you have to increase the pressure in order to do that. And so that's where a lot of the safety concerns come in, is because they want to push more gas through 60-year-old pipes. And so, to be clear, this GTN Express project doesn't actually involve any replacement of the pipes. And that's why it's also, there's fewer permits they need to be able to do this, which is sort of wild, actually. And so what this project actually is equipment upgrades at 3 compressor stations. And the compressor stations exist so that they can, keep the pressure within the pipeline. And these are, like, every 40 to 100 miles on the pipeline, and there is one in Washington and one in Idaho that are going to be upgraded as part of this proposal. Probably not too far from you, Helen, right?
Athol.
Yeah. And then, so Athol, Idaho, and then Starbuck, Washington, which is sort of right near the Snake River in the corner of Walla Walla County. And again, to just reiterate, they're not actually moving any dirt for this project. They're not replacing old pipes. They're just replacing some of the equipment that goes into making it so they can compress the gas through the pipeline. So why is this a bad idea? So we've talked a bit about safety concerns, and also TC Energy has a fairly bad track record when it comes to pipeline safety. Just in December there was the Keystone, and it's an oil pipeline, so it's slightly different, but owned by the same company, the Keystone oil pipeline spill in Kansas. That was a big, big deal for communities there. And GTN, actually, this pipeline, Helen was just telling me, they've had this pipeline itself, GTN has had three leaks in the past 10 years. Luckily, no one was hurt, mainly because these leaks happened in rural areas. Like, for one of them, a farmer in Eastern Washington on the Palouse happened to, like, be in his field one day and realize, like, oh, why isn't my stuff growing, like, on this specific spot? And then realized there was a pipeline, like, the gas pipeline was leaking there. And, you know, there are gas pipeline explosions in this country almost every year. And there's resources about that online that you can look up to learn more. And sometimes people get hurt or killed in it. And then another reason why this is a bad idea and doesn't align with what we want and what our communities want is because Washington isn't actually going to use any of this gas. And so actually, you know, GTN and TC Energy have tried to show that there's going to be an increased demand for natural gas, or fracked gas, as I like to call it. But this isn't actually what the numbers and the experts are telling us. Gas demand is actually going down in Washington, as it is in Oregon and California, which are places where this gas could be used. And Helen will talk a little bit about Idaho in a second. And actually, Earth Ministry Weipel and some of our coalition partners helped pass new Washington State building codes within the last year that are set to take effect soonish, actually. And what these say is that new commercial and residential buildings have to be built with electric heat pump space and water heating. And so that, you know, that as we build more construction, and like where I live in Seattle, we have a housing need, and so like we're building up new buildings and housing, and that's not going to be powered or heated by natural gas. And so as we move in that direction, at the same time, TC Energy is trying to lock our region into, you know, decades more of gas. One of the main things that is a concern for the faith community and for Earth Ministry is like the health risks, and Dr. Julie could speak to this, I'm sure, but the health risks of fracking and living near fracking is pretty well understood at this point. And we know that fracking happens on a lot of indigenous lands and harms those communities. A couple of months ago, we had an online people's hearing event, our coalition did, where an organizer in British Columbia came and spoke and shared about his work in fighting gas extraction and fracking in Northeast British Columbia. And he had run the numbers. He's sort of a policy research guy and had discovered that, you know, to meet this increased gas flow that TC Energy wants to put through the GTN Express project, they would need to dig 660 new fracking wells in Northeast British Columbia. And he explained a bit about what the Indigenous communities there are going through, the First Nations communities in Canada. And so, like, that weighs on my heart a lot. I'm thinking about, like, what's being done in our name in these communities when we don't even really need this gas. And that, every time I share that statistic, people are like, whoa. And also, like, we know we need to transition off dependence on fossil fuels and fracked gas. And so there's main climate concerns as well. And actually, one of the main arguments against this project is it really just throws our states and tribes' climate goals out the window. You know, we have several policies in place here in Washington that help us put on a track of where we want to go in terms of, you know, climate pollution. And the recently passed Climate Commitment Act a couple years ago that's now sort of starting to be implemented in our state, you know, is designed to limit pollution like this going forward. And so I think there's a lot of questions as to, like, this really doesn't fit with the plans that our states have. And then specifically because, I mean, the faith community also cares a lot about environmental justice and making sure that, you know, harm is not being done to overburdened communities that have already that are already dealing with increased climate impacts. And specifically, there's been some concerns raised about the Starbuck compressor station, which is where they would be doing these upgrades. And this is in rural Walla Walla County. And I'll talk a bit more about the GTN Express process and like how we can take action. But there's concern, like the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission even admitted that there was like an environmental justice population near the Starbuck compressor station, which is farm workers working there. And before I started this job, I didn't know anything about compressor stations, and Helen can talk a bit to this. The things that I get to learn in organizing faith communities for environmental justice. But they actually power these compressor stations by gas. Like, they're not hooked up into a little electrical grid or anything because they're often out in the middle of nowhere. And so it's cheaper for them to run. It's cheaper for them to burn natural gas, fracked gas, to power these compressor stations. And so that is an impact at folks that live nearby. Even if it's in a rural area, like there are concerns with compressor stations, with noise and those sorts of things in communities. Okay, so who is opposed to this project? Likely a lot of you if you're here. In terms of big names that have come out against this project, both Oregon Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden have stated publicly that they oppose this project and that it's not in Oregon's best interest, as well as the Attorneys General of Washington, Oregon, and California. California is included because a lot of the gas that would go through GTN ends up there. And then Governor Jay Inslee has also publicly stated that this project is against our climate goals as a state. And then in terms of tribes and tribal nations that have spoken out, so the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission, or CRITFIC, has also stated that, you know, this goes against both their climate goals as tribes, but also against the state's climate goals. And they also raise serious concerns about tribal consultation. And so CRITFIC is made up of Yakima Nation, the Nez Perce tribe, and then Umatilla and Warm Springs in Oregon.
What about Washington senators?
That's a great question, Janet. So, and that's part of what I'll talk about, is like that's where we're putting pressure right now on Senator Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell to speak out and say something. It's sort of a mystery to me as to why they haven't said something, because it really is, it's sort of a no-brainer in my mind. I mean, I'm standing up here teaching you all about this, but for senators who claim to be like climate champions, this is something that is really concerning. And then I also just wanted to share that, you know, Helen and I just represent two organizations in a multi-state coalition that's working on this issue all together. And that's been something that's been really fun for me, is to work, often our work is only statewide, and it's been really great to get to know folks in Oregon and Idaho who are working on this too. And then I'm about to submit a faith leader's letter with over 350 faith leaders from Oregon, Washington, and Idaho that have stated that this project is dangerous and immoral. And so that will be going to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission soon. And then I also know that WPSR and their partners, Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, have also put together a letter of health professionals and doctors who are really concerned about this project from that health perspective. And then several Oregon and Washington state legislators have also, said something. So now the question is, how do we stop GTN Express? So it's actually a really critical moment right now in the campaign, because the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission sort of has a pending decision on this project that could come out as soon as April 20th next week. And so we're doing all we can to try to get it through to both this federal agency and senators that can influence FERC, as I'll refer to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And so, one of the interesting things about this is that FERC was originally supposed to make a decision January or February, I think, and so it keeps getting delayed. And it's not clear to me whether that's a good sign, because, we're raising more voices, people are speaking out about this. And as I said, part of the work in this also is trying to pressure Patty Murray and Maria Cantwell to say something about this, given that both Oregon senators have already said something. Governor Inslee has said something. Our Oregon partners are pressuring Governor Kotek in Oregon right now to speak out and say something. But she's new to office, and I think is trying to get up to speed. And then the big thing is the attorneys general. The state of Washington, Oregon, and California have all formally intervened to FERC to say, with legal arguments as to why they should deny this project. And basically, FERC makes this decision based on whether the project is in the public interest. And so there's a lot of arguments saying, no, it's really not in the public interest. Yeah.
Have you asked for some of the things that you lean on senators, and maybe the Oregon senators, talk to them? And have you talked to Spokane City Council about this?
I have not talked to Spokane City Council, yeah. I know Janet had tried to raise the issue with the Liberty Lake mayor. I actually was in a meeting with Patty Murray's staff last week in Seattle, and they're getting a lot of heat about this right now. People are calling. They've gotten over 100 calls between their DC and local offices. And so it's not like they don't know what's going on. People are writing to them about this every day. I do not know if UCUT is in on this at all. Not to my knowledge. I think it would be great to talk to them about it for sure. And so there's really a lot riding on this FERC decision. As I said, because this project, if this were a new pipeline, there would be a whole lot more permits needed, both state permits and federal permits, to push it through. A couple years ago, I used to work in Washington, D.C., and we were fighting a new gas pipeline called the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, which now is dead, thankfully. But that's part of the reason why they're trying to push gas through existing pipelines, is because new projects are getting stopped across the country. And for that, it was all these different state permits. But for this, it's really FERC decides, and then there may be a permit with Washington State Department of Ecology, and so that's something we'll be following as well. And unfortunately, the record for FERC deciding on projects like this is not great, and so we're really sort of going into this as an uphill battle.
Does FERC have any grounds to refuse it? And what's the basis by which they can refuse it?
Yeah, and so that's a good question. So something interesting happened last week, actually, where FERC, formally wrote back to GTN. Helen discovered this and let us all know about it. But FERC wrote back to GTN basically asking some key questions, like, and they referred to some of the things the state attorneys general had written, and basically saying, like, how do you know the gas demand is going to go up when, like, there's all this evidence saying that it won't? Or, like, and so they gave them 2 weeks to respond to some of those questions. And for folks in the coalition thinking about this, there's, on one hand, it could be, okay, they're finally asking these important questions, never mind that we went through a full, like, already went through an environmental impact statement process, why weren't these questions answered or included in that process? And that's one thing we've also been trying to get through to share with the senators, is that this process has been flawed. Like, it hasn't been full of, like, it's very difficult to, like, provide public input to FERC. Like, you have to create a whole account, and, like, it's all, like, I had to get instructions from a partner to figure out how to do it. Not accessible. Let alone that the environmental impact statement they did was fairly flawed in most people's opinions. And so, like, our senators should care about good process as well when something big like this is at stake in our communities. And, I mean, they didn't even hold a public hearing on this, and so we held our own public hearing online, which several folks here spoke at. Helen, do you want to share a bit about Idaho? We're doing pretty good on time. Do you want to share a bit about your perspective in Idaho? And then we'll break for some more questions. But feel free to ask.
Katrina at some point. Right?
Yes, Katrina, yes. I think Katrina can send us out.
Perfect.
After Helen. Yes, don't.
If there's a topic difference, but.
Yeah, go ahead.
Idaho's got to get across a major river. Right? I'm presuming it's going across the state. Is it going up? Do you know how it gets across the state?
It goes under the Snake River as well, yeah. And I'm not an expert on how, like, you can look it up online and there's, like, different trench digging methods for how they put a pipeline under the river. And so, like, when you build a new pipeline, you have to get water crossing permits. But because this is an existing pipeline, they don't need that, even if they're going to push a ton more gas through and under the Spokane River and the Snake River. It doesn't cross the Columbia because it crosses into Oregon just sort of on the corner where it bends. And I know you have some concerns about water at some point.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone, for coming. We really appreciate it, and we also appreciate the possibility of your greater involvement in stopping this pipeline, which is essentially the Northwest Keystone XL. It's owned by the same company who has a horrid track record. The Keystone pipeline has leaked 23 times in its short 10-year history. And as Maddie was saying, GTN has leaked 3 times, once in eastern Washington, as she noted, and a couple times up in the Moyes Springs area, and also near Eastgate, where the pipeline enters from BC. Some of our concerns in Idaho are that, so GTN, which is the subsidiary company of TC Energy, has proposed pumping another 150 million cubic feet per day through this pipeline, which isn't exactly a huge increase. I think at one point we figured out it was only about 10%, but nonetheless, this is a 62-year-old pipeline, and it likely has flaws. It's just a matter of time before she blows. But of that 150 million cubic feet per day, 50 of it, so a third, would go to Intermountain Gas down in Boise and would cover the whole service area of the Snake River Plain in southern Idaho. And people down there are still essentially oblivious of this. We've been working a lot with the Idaho Sierra Club to get the word out, and thankfully they've been notifying their members. But the issue, one of the questions that was brought up recently by FERC requesting further information, and this is only the third time since they first released the draft environmental impact statement all the way last June that they've asked GTN for more information. One of the questions was, so how do you know they need all that gas down in southern Idaho, and how is this going to work? What's so confusing to us is that right now southern Idaho is supplied by the Williams Northwest Pipeline. It comes out of western Wyoming, it goes across the Snake River Plain, and then it goes out to Oregon and Washington. And essentially, Intermountain Gas has been supplying the lateral lines off of that major pipeline to all the customers and businesses and such. Well, so I guess the proposal is to replace that gas with gas off of GTN, which would essentially go backwards up the Williams Pipeline from Stanfield, Oregon, which is really close to the Columbia River. It's a place where we also fought the tar sands and megalodes with the Umatilla tribe and folks from the West Coast. And it's just really questionable. And another thing that may have been missed is that GTN, in its three previous times of answering questions posed by FERC to them, and we're really glad that these questions are based on the Attorney General's input, has just supplied that information at the last minute. Well, their deadline is April 18th, and a FERC decision may be coming out on April 20th. So how is FERC staff going to analyze all that in just 2 days and come out with a decision? So I sort of suspect, well, there's two implications for this, either that FERC is allowing GTN to stack the record in their favor at the last minute, or that it's just not happening this month. FERC has a monthly meeting on the third Thursday of every month. Maybe it'll happen in May, which is great. We can all get outdoors, do more outreach, have more protests. But we don't know. We'll know tomorrow night. It appears on the agenda about a week before the FERC meeting. What are some other concerns? Oh, yeah. So our Idaho politicians are bought and sold by the industry, essentially. Back in October, they submitted comments that said, yeah, we need more gas because, Idaho's the fastest growing or one of the fastest growing states in population in the country. And come to find out, thanks to the great investigative journalism of HuffPost, that letter, that comment letter that they sent in, with Senator Risch of Idaho being the first approached, and then all the rest of the congressional delegation jumping on board, as well as the Idaho governor. That letter was likely ghostwritten by, word for word even, it came out, by attorneys for GTN. So we're super grateful for all the officials in Oregon and Washington that have come out against this. It's unprecedented. Oregon and Washington citizens should be very proud of their elected officials and all the work they put into educating those officials and getting them elected in the first place. But in Idaho, it's no man's land politically. So what do we got? We got protests. That's about it. Because there really isn't any politicians that accurately represent the concerns of citizens that, are sitting on top of a 62-year-old pipeline that could blow at any time. Some of our place-based concerns in Idaho is that this pipeline proceeds directly under the parking lot at the base of the Schweitzer Mountain Ski Resort, where everybody parks their cars and rides the shuttle bus up the mountain. So if it ever blows, well, there goes everybody's cars, which I wouldn't be too sad about, but, But it's an issue, and it goes under residences in Idaho or in the Sandpoint area. It goes under the Pend'Oreille River, only 30 miles upstream of the Kalispell Reservation. And, of course, they are a very fish and water-based community. It goes under Athol, like right through downtown, not far from an elementary school. It's only about 2 miles from Silverwood. So, hey, what if you're riding the roller coaster, the Ferris wheel, and all of a sudden that compressor station that is one of three, as our good colleague mentioned, one in Athol, one in Starbuck, which it would impact a lot of migrant workers and also Native communities, and then there's one in Kent, really close, or Kent, Oregon, close to Bend, But, you know, it's an issue around all these compressor stations because, and I'm sure Dr. Dooley can address this a lot more, these compressor stations release volatile organic compounds, all kinds of toxic stuff. They regularly stage blowbacks, I think it's called, where they purposely release gas because they're maintaining the station. It's just a big chemical hazard for all with, you know, in the few miles around all these compressor stations. And Athol is a community full of sort of spread out residential, suburb area type residences. I don't know really what else to say that I can add because Maddie covered it really well. And we definitely would be open to questions. And we encourage everyone to grab a t-shirt so we can spread the word. We have this big, beautiful banner that was put together by the coalition. And I don't know, I'm sure I'm missing a few things, but that's our concerns in Idaho at this point.
One of the fun facts Helen taught me about the pipeline was that where she lives, there's snow often. And so actually you can see where the pipeline is because the snow melts on top of it, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, Janet. So it sounds to me from what you just said that even if it doesn't blow, the worst case scenario, it's already toxic to these communities just being there.
Mm-hmm. You can that. And FERC even admitted that there was environmental justice concerns.
Okay.
Two folks living in Walla Walla County here at the Starbuck. And I'll also say that compressor station is pretty close to the Snake River.
So before they start pushing more, we already would be wanting to backtrack from having these pipelines anywhere near and this part of running our economy. So that's new information for me that it's already toxic.
Yep.
We don't have to wait for the ultimate explosion, but right now it's a problem.
And there's dozens of compressor stations too. It's not just these three, but I should probably try to put a good map up on our Facebook page in the next few days. There's dozens of compressor stations all across the whole. It's about what?
And there is one in Spokane County near Rosalia. You had a question?
No, what does the EPA say?
So the EPA, I believe, the West Region, actually, or the region, whatever number of the office that's based in Seattle, they actually submitted comments to FERC saying they had concerns about this.
But they're not saying that it's...
I think they did say it was hazardous. Yeah, I think they said that they had concerns about the project. Well, right now the process is they were allowed to weigh in to FERC about it, and then FERC makes the final decision. They're pretty good with that, and so next steps, if FERC approves this project on April 20th or later, the next steps would be for the states to file a lawsuit about it. And so that's why it's so key that the attorneys generals have weighed in.
Mm-hmm. And two of the groups of the coalition are also interveners in this case right now, so they have legal standing. The attorney generals, when they filed their comments on the last day of the draft comment period, also tried to intervene, but the deadline for doing that was last February. So they are not technically interveners in this quasi-judicial case, but of course everyone's pushing them to get involved legally as much as they can.
Yeah, just a couple more questions, and I'll invite Katrina. Yeah, George.
Jim and I are going to have to leave for another meeting. The Veterans for Peace are firmly against this pipeline.
Love it. Thanks for coming, George.
And two allies, Salem Lutheran Church, I happen to be Lutheran, the Salem Lutheran Church and other Lutheran churches are your allies, particularly,
we love the, Lutherans,
particularly
yeah.
the Valley Church, the Valley Church of Spokane Valley. You know what denomination that is?
They're non-denom.
Non-denom.
Mm-hmm.
They can come on board on
the
pipeline goes under their church.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get some conversation.
Finally, I wanted to announce that there is a film that's going to be playing at the Magic Lantern soon, I think.
Mm.
It's entitled, the title of the film is How to Blow Up a Pipeline. Go see it.
Oh, okay. Thanks, George. Yeah.
with similar pressure to natural gas being pumped through that fair and like how many
I think there's a lot of that, and actually one of our, our coalition has been working with the Pipeline Safety Trust, which is like a well-known American NGO on pipeline, on like pipeline safety, and they are very concerned about this project, and I've learned that there's a lot to be said for, we need more pipeline safety in this country. Yeah, I'm happy to answer some more questions as we walk out or when we're down there. But since we're trying to meet the sunset, I want to invite Katrina up. Katrina, Deaconess Katrina Martich, is a member of Salem Lutheran. And I just wanted her to speak a bit about, you know, faith community values and her community's values and why they're on board with this. And I forgot to invite her up earlier, so.
Thank you, Maddie. And on behalf of Pastor Leib, I would like to welcome you and send you out, I guess, here. Bless you and everything you're doing today. Pastor Leib had a prior commitment at the time this meeting was scheduled, but she definitely supports this effort and wishes she could be here and sends her regards. Maddie asked me to speak a little bit about the values of Salem Lutheran, and I think it's important to know that we are community-oriented and place-oriented. Our mission is that we seek and celebrate God's presence for the life of the world, beginning in West Central Spokane. And that's here. And this is where we encounter God with our neighbor, and this is where we live out our faith in a way that is life-giving. And we see this pipeline as something that is life-taking. We live out our mission in many ways. You asked me to speak to the values. How are we on time? Because I know
we have just a few minutes before we should head out. 1 or 2 minutes.
Okay. So I won't say much about that because part of our place then that we have to speak about is who was here before us.
Yeah.
And so I want to give the land acknowledgement. But just kind of real briefly, like if you have trouble parking, that's because we banded 15 years ago with other Lutheran churches, gave up our parking lots, and formed a nonprofit called Spokane Urban Ministries and built low-income housing. It's the apartment complex you'll walk past here toward the river, whole nother one over there. We also are a founding member of our Place Community Outreach, which is food bank, laundry services, and a complete resource center for people in our neighborhood who are struggling. We are strongly and always walking into becoming more anti-racist. We have an anti-racist task force, and we are firmly embracing and affirming of our queer and trans siblings, many of whom have leadership positions in this congregation. And we surround all of these and all we do with love. And our roots are deep here. I don't know if you noticed, there's a plaque on this wall that you walk past that says we're a territorial church.
Yeah.
Our roots go to 1888 in this place. And there's been a lot of change. And we have changed and we have grown. And the congregations that came before me, that I haven't been here that long. I haven't been here 100 years. But over the decades, they kept making the choice to not flee out to the suburbs, to stay here, to be rooted in place. However, that also means that we are directly linked to colonization and what was done to the people here and what was done to the land here. And our anti-racism task force right now is working on what is a fully embodied acknowledgement of what has been done and the benefit we have gained from it. And at this point, I would like to offer you a land acknowledgement that many here in Spokane are using. We are at 2 at this time. It is one that was developed in collaboration with the Spokane tribe and specifically names things that they wanted spoken out loud, truths they wanted to be told. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded land of the Spokane people, and that these lands were once the major trading center for the Spokanes as they shared this place and welcomed other area tribes through their relations, history, trade, and ceremony. We also want to acknowledge that the land holds the spirit of the place through its knowledge, culture, and all the original peoples since time immemorial. As we take a moment to consider the impacts of colonization, may we also acknowledge the strengths and resiliency of the Spokanes and their relatives as we work together making decisions that benefit all. May we do so as one heart, one mind, and one spirit. We are grateful to be on the shared lands of the Spokane people, and we ask for the support of their ancestors and all relations. We ask that you recognize these injustices that forever change the lives of the Spokane people and all their relatives. We agree to work together to stop all acts of continued injustices toward Native Americans and all our relatives. It is time for reconciliation. We must act upon the truths and take actions that will create restorative justice for all people. And now I call you to join with Maddie as we take one of these restorative justice acts for the good of the land and for the good of all people, including the Spokane people who continue to live and thrive here.
Thank you, Katrina. So what we're going to do is we are going to head out and just walk down the block and then down the up. That's not very clear, but I think it'll be clear when we get out there. And we're going to walk to the river because this pipeline does go under the Spokane River. And so there's a banner here that we would love folks to hold. There's t-shirts there. If anyone needs to take a quick bathroom break, I'd go do that now. I believe there's bathrooms downstairs. Yes, and please grab a t-shirt. I also have some signs that say, like, Washington Faith Community, say, Stop GTN Express. And so we're going to, I'm really excited. We're going to do that together. And we're just going to go down to the river. This is not civil disobedience. We're going to stay on the sidewalk. And if we get asked to leave, we will. I don't anticipate that walk.